You are listening to the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast, episode 141, Apple's Next Release Explained.
Welcome to episode 141 of the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast. Today is June the 5th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Frilla, and this is my mutant brother, James Frilla.
Yes, I actually saw the X-Men movie, and here's what's interesting. This was Sunday night, I believe, because we did the show on Saturday, so it was Sunday night. I was like, all right, we're going to go watch the new X-Men movie. Jesse, are you totally pumped? And she was like, yeah, totally pumped. She's like, just give me a quick recap. You know, what's the lead up to it? I was like, all right, well, starts
That's
with
challenging.
X-Men Origins and or First Class or whatever it is. And I was like, yeah, so it starts with its combination, I think, First Class, and then starts up right after the latest Wolverine movie. And she's like, wait, which one was the First Class one? I was like, well, you know, when they were younger and it shows how they got started, it's got Kevin Bacon in it, and she's like, I don't remember that at all. We are literally like 10 minutes away from stepping out the door and going to watch the movie, and I'm like, I feel like you would have remembered Kevin Bacon in the movie.
Yeah.
He's kind of memorable. And she's like, no, I don't remember that. Like,
so she
we were married. How did you? I don't understand this. And so I was like, so I pulled up a quick trailer of it, you know, and I'm like, here, jog your memory. And she goes, right. Nope, never saw that.
Wow. Like, that's for anybody who's seen the movie, you would realize that it's actually the most important one to have seen in the entire series.
So we did not go watch the movie that night.
Yeah, it was probably a good decision.
Instead, I hopped on iTunes, and we watched it, and watched that movie. And then Tuesday night? Or was it Monday night? When did we go see it then?
It's a known unknown.
I can't remember now. Tuesday night, I think. We went, and we watched it. Because, yeah, I was like, this is very unacceptable for you to have not seen it.
Yeah, so that would have been some. I'm not always a, you know, one for you have to see every movie in a series. Sometimes it's good enough to just get the broad strokes and then catch up later. But that one's pretty critical. I mean, if you don't, yeah. I mean,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I'm with you. You could have. Well, I mean, it was important to have seen. It definitely tied in with the first three. I think the Wolverine movies didn't matter as much.
I think it was important for development of characters, but it's, you know, it just as far as critical plot story goes, there's only one that was really critical, and that was, you know, First Class. You know,
yes.
Outside of that,
yes.
They basically cover all of the lead up to, you know, they cover all the basics in the opening monologue dialogue stuff, you know, of like, how did we get here in the present, quote unquote.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's all the days of future past that are from the past and the future, whatever.
Yeah. But no, so I watched it and it was good. I liked it.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that. This story sort of reminds me of what has become a notorious event in my life. When I was on a service trip with a group from my college. We were working on Habitat for Humanity a project, and the only way I was talked into going was that I was going to be allowed to see Star Wars Episode 3 opening night with the group that I went with. Now, the group that I went with happened to be me representing my fraternity, one other guy from one of the fraternity, and then 12 sorority girls. That was the entire group. And of that group, only me, the other fraternity guy, and which, yeah, I know it sounds like an awesome week, and it was an awesome week. And one of the sorority girls, so three of us, had seen any of the Star Wars movies. And so we're about to walk into Episode 3, the sixth movie in the series.
What?
Which, yeah, the bridge movie that has all of the preamble and all of the stuff.
Yeah.
And they're telling us this, like, this was like planned as part of the, I knew the person that was organizing the event, so this was like planned as part of the thing, like, you know, months, the months long preparation where we're getting people to agree and everything. This was a known part of it, and it wasn't until the like 2 days before that they were like, yeah, we've never actually seen any of the movies. Like, are we going to be missing anything important? Oh my
God. Nope, you're good. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I
just don't sit near me because I don't want any questions.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so it was so funny because they wanted to understand, and like you start to describe a little bit and you realize it just gets like, you know, it gets worse and worse as you're like, oh my gosh, these people have no idea. So I did what now this is why it became notorious, because I did probably the dorkiest, nerdiest, goobiest thing I've ever done in my entire life, which was, we've been working all day hard, lifting things, pounding nails, building, you know, real, you know, tough stuff, hanging out with a bunch of sorority girls. And then right before dinner, I sat down and gave them a brief 25-minute, like, lecture on the history of Star Wars and, like, had a whiteboard and the timeline. And I had borrowed all their magazines because if you remember the last, like, when the Star Wars came out, like, every magazine was featuring one of the actors. And so, like, I was like, this guy, he becomes the guy wearing the black mask and later on called Darth Vader. And this guy, he's Obi-Wan. And he's like, and I'm like pulling up there, like giving them and like and telling them all the different storylines. And they're like, wow, this sounds, it's really stupid. And then I was just like, oh, this is awful. And it was super dorky, but I felt vindicated because the day after the movie, so we saw it on Thursday, on Friday, we came back to the place we were staying after the work day. And I laid down to like take a nap, but was having a hard time sleeping. And a couple of the girls had gathered like on the other side of the room and were talking quietly. And I might have been eavesdropping. And they started talking about Star Wars, the movie that they just watched. And like, yeah, that was so harsh when that one guy who became the Darth guy, when he was like burning. Oh my gosh, that was so awful. Yeah, and like with the one girl, his girlfriend, and like they were talking about it and like getting into it. I was like, oh yes. I don't feel quite as bad about myself. They're nerding out just a little bit, just enough to justify it. So yeah, but you know what we're not here to talk about, James? We're definitely not here to talk about Star Wars. Instead, we are here this week, like every week, to talk about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by corporate opera, we mean Apple. All the dealings of that company and the people working for Apple and the marketing campaigns of Apple and the technology Apple's developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure.
Yes, I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions. I would also like to disclose that I've come to a conclusion that even given this week just seems appropriate to have reached it, I think that Macs are better than PCs.
All right.
I know, it's crazy. Let me just give a small example.
Please.
So, why? It's not baseless, trust me. Though I do make those as well, so you know, we gotta check it.
in your defense.
Yeah. So HP, the company I'm not representing right now, is switching over to a voice over IP system. And nice. So, yeah, saves me minutes and that'll be cool. But everything's going through my computer. And total side note, my internet rate has, that the year-long discount of $30 a month has finally expired, so it's popped back up. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to switch over to Comcast, despite how horrible they are, because the price is cheaper and the speed's faster.
They're literally the worst, as John Oliver describes it. They're worse than GM, who is trying to kill you.
Yeah, so I just like, it's actually becoming hard to share stuff at work and be on the phone at the same time, because it uses double bandwidth now, and people can tell when I'm at home. I'm like, that's not what I want. So
right.
And now I was always like $30. That was my excuse. Well, now it's $45.
Yeah.
And I can get for 12 months, I can get $32 for super, super fast.
Wow, James, I always forget this about you. Because it's not that your excuse was $30 and everybody listens to you. But what you didn't tell them was that it would have cost you $2. It would have cost you $24 extra.
It's not exactly that. It was, I mean, I'm excluding the $100 for the modem and, you know, there's another $100 in there for switching. And that is only their promotion price as well. And so it was just one of those where, and at the time that I looked, they didn't have that good of a deal either. And so, you know, there are a bunch of reasons. Because it's going to jump back up to 66 in a year, and I've got to make hard choices then.
And the whole, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, I realize. But, it just, sometimes, James, you and I make different decisions like that.
That's true. That's not even the point of it, though. That's not even the point of my comment. Okay. So we're using this system, and I've got this headset here that plugs into the USB port. On my Mac, I will plug it in, and it's smart enough to know to use it for, say, this podcast or when I get a phone call, which will become important coming in the future, apparently, to use it. But it will continue to play music through my speaker system.
Yes.
And do all other sounds, right?
Yes.
Now I have this thing plugged into my work computer all the time to, you know, to make phone calls. It is not smart enough to play music over my speaker system or sound off any notifications that used to be audible. So I could be like off doing something, you know, like making lunch or something, and if my computer dinged, I'd be like, "Oh, let me go see who it is." Yeah, now I don't hear anything because it's all in the speaker system. It's not smart enough to make the distinction between what sounds would make sense to go through the speaker versus the headset. And on a Mac, I can configure it. It just seems to have guessed right the first time.
Yeah, and what's really confounding about it is because I was about to make the argument that, you know, it's, you know, in Windows defense, it's not necessarily Windows' fault. It has, you know, there's also the definitive aspect that, you know, your sound card matters. But as you were describing what the features you want, I realized my Mac Mini does exactly what you're talking about. And my Mac Mini has an integrated sound card. It's got nothing fancy. I mean, it is like, you know, it's obviously a Mac Mini is still an expensive computer. It's still a relatively high-end computer. But you're not talking about, you know, a $300 laptop. You're talking about your HP EliteBook, which is an expensive laptop. It's got a good sound card in it. It is. It's just the, you know, it's just not programmed well, and it's not programmed for that particular feature set. And what's in, you know, it's funny. It's like my, you know, I don't think mine guessed right, but I think I configured it once, and if I ever had to change it, I'd have to go through the process of figuring out how to do it again because it's never gotten it wrong since, you know, which is another thing that sometimes my Windows computers has a hard time with. I will be honest, though, in the last 24 hours, I've managed to crash both a Mac and a PC by overloading the RAM, which I think says something about myself.
that's impressive.
Yeah, maybe we'll definitely get into how I crashed my Mac later on.
Excellent. I want to hear about that.
But if you follow me on the Twitter, which you really should, at Matthew D. Furlow, you'd already have a hint of what exactly it was I did that got my Mac to crash and why that relates to this show's podcast. If you want to follow me on through the pictorial version of social media, go to Instagram. I'm at NextWiggin4, NextWiggin4. You can see all sorts of cool videos and stuff, concerts I go to, and the exciting life that I live as I make that, as I try to justify the cost of the events I go to.
So, accountability time here. Did you check out If This Then That to connect your Instagram to your Twitter?
No. I've not done anything, James. I'll be honest with you. I didn't do things that were really important this week because I've had so little time, much less the things that are fun to do. So, no, If This Then That fell to the wayside, unfortunately. I'm actually incredibly impressed that I managed to get anything together for this podcast.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear you got your priorities semi-straight.
Exactly. But
Cool. You could follow me on jamesfurlow.com or just James Furlow anywhere. type that in, James Furlough plus whatever the service is, you'll probably find it.
DuckDuckGo? Can
totally,
I search on DuckDuckGo?
No, not really.
You can't?
Wait, say that again? Oh, sorry, what'd you ask? If I
searched on DuckDuckGo, would you show up?
Oh, I don't know.
That's right. I just Googled for DuckDuckGo. That's awesome. James Furlough. Let's see. You show up right on top. JamesFurlough.com. James Furlough Google Plus. James Furlough. Yep, you can go to. This is important because now DuckDuckGo is a possible default search field that you can set for your iOS, which is exciting. Mm. Some cool things happened this week.
Before we even get into the big news, I have a piece of news that you will find fun and interesting.
All right, I'm awesome. I'm awesome. Also, I'm ready for this awesome news.
Good disclosure. So we once had a t-shirt business, which was fun. We made t-shirts. There's a picture of me sitting in a Google office wearing one of our t-shirts because we used AdWords for advertising, and I filled out some random online thing. And so we care about t-shirts in the t-shirt industry because we're interested. And so I saw this company called SeeMe. That sounded very interesting. They are a t-shirt design company that creates all over designs. Okay. And you know how normally you get like your 12 inch square or something, or if you print it like us, you'd make it a little bigger, it'd be like 17 by 17. These guys apparently can go all over your shirt. And what they've done, which seems pretty awesome, is they've created an iPhone app that you can take a picture, or you can import a picture, let's put it that way. You can import a picture into their app, upload it, design a t-shirt, and buy that t-shirt. And each shirt costs $32, but remember, it's all over print, right? It's not just that little space, and you can do color and whatever else. And if someone else uses that image of yours, you get six of those $32. Ooh. You can also make postcards for $3, and if someone uses it, your picture to create their own postcard, you get $1 from it.
Nice. That's pretty cool. I've always liked these as somebody who, you know, who cares about the t-shirt industry. I've been very fascinated with the all over prints because they're challenging. They're not very. If you're familiar with the technology involved in shirt printing, as James, I know you are, they're not the most straightforward thing to do. But yeah, so I would be really curious to see what how they do it, like, you know, what kind of a printer they're using and stuff like that.
I don't know. Well, it was funny. There was if you go to their website, see.me, there's a link that says how it works. So I'm like, all right, I'm interested, and it just tells you the consumer side, right? Create an account, take or discover a picture, upload it, and order it. I'm like, no, that's not what I want. I want to see how it works.
That's funny.
This does not count. But yeah, I mean, they look pretty cool in terms of design and style. SeeMe. $32 is, you know, it's not the cheapest shirt in the world, but
yeah, you know, okay. Whatever.
That's all right. They use Vapor Apparel. I don't know what that means, but
yeah, I don't know what that means either. Cool. I'll have to check it out. I'll have to play around with different pictures, photographs. See if I can come up with something cool.
You could, in theory, be at a concert with a band that you love, get a photo of you and that band member, upload it right then on the spot, and have your t-shirt ordered before you even get home and realize that you probably didn't want to do that.
I was going to say, that's stupid, but I see what you're saying. I see where you're driving at.
Or how about this one? You're on vacation. You have an awesome photo. Well, at that vacation, you upload a photo, whatever, and then you've got your shirt waiting for you at home. Or, even better yet, you want to make family and friends jealous, so it does have the postcard piece, I guess. You take a photo while on vacation, upload it, send a postcard to people saying, hey, we miss you, and then they can see a real photo of you for only $3, which is actually competitive with other postcard sending apps.
Yeah. Ah, that's interesting. That's a... Yeah. That's interesting. I don't really know. I'll have to try it out.
That's all you gotta say. What's your cool app?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, because it's, you know, I like t-shirts. T-shirts are cool.
I know you do.
No.
I knew you would appreciate it.
This is one of
my... They have over a million members, by the way.
Wait, what?
They have over a million members.
That's a lot of members.
Yeah.
So also a little this, I realize what I just did here. You know, a little pre-Apple preamble. Microsoft, I just, I'm not going to go easy on Microsoft today, evidently. So Microsoft made an admission about the Kinect, and the Xbox One. Originally, the Xbox One was billed as this holistic solution where you'd get the Xbox, you'd get the Xbox Kinect, and everything comes together, and you'd use it all, and it's like it have this essential interface. And yeah. Basically, what the whole idea was, it was pitched as like the sensor, the equivalent of the sensor bar for the Wii. You could not use the Wii without the sensor bar, supposedly. Really and truly, you could use the D-pad and to control everything on the screen. There's not a requirement for pointing at things. It just so happens that by forcing you to do that, you got used to using it, and it kind of gets everybody onto the whole game, you know, the direction of what it's going. But, you know, as far as they were concerned, it was, you know, a worthwhile, you know, part of the whole ecosystem. It's part of, yeah, it, it's part of it, what makes this important. And Xbox wanted to make the Kinect that integrated and that important of peripheral, and I wanted it to rather move it from the peripheral to the main stage. And one of the big problems that people had was that with the original Kinect and the original Xboxes, you'd plug the Kinect in and then you'd get performance hits on the Xbox, and it was such cool technology that you didn't necessarily have a lot of people griping about it, but it was there, it was present. Well, they said one of the big things that they fixed was they added a bunch of like microprocessors to the Kinect, so it had its own processors doing the heavy lifting of the analysis and the video and everything. So that you'd get this, you know, so that you would have the Kinect would be, you know, running. So that it would be running on its own, and it would just be sharing a little bit of data back and forth with the Xbox,
yeah,
and it wouldn't be a performance hit. And then they, you know, then they made the interface such that you had to use it in order to navigate. And this was all about, you know, making it so that they could justify the higher price because it came with this cool peripheral. Well, obviously, a couple weeks ago, month ago or so, Microsoft came out and said they are no longer going to be selling only the Xbox One with the Kinect. You can now buy
essentially
it without.
Essentially dooming the Kinect to never working.
Exactly.
Or being fully integrated. Yep.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's that. Number one, you've now proven that it's not necessary. Which everybody, if you've used the Xbox One at all, you knew that. You could use the controller. The interface works the same. It wasn't necessary by any means, but at least everybody had it so that games could justify using it. Games could justify making it necessary because everybody had it. Well, now that not everybody's going to have it, games won't make it a requirement, which means it will really be pointless. This is awesome. Prepare to be confused. I'll read directly from Engadget. Despite everything we've heard about the Xbox One's Kinect sensor containing its own onboard processor, it's clear the add-on does add to the burden. Microsoft has confirmed to Eurogamer that after this month's update, developers can access, quote, up to 10% additional GPU performance simply by virtue of system resources that no longer have to be reserved for the motion sensing peripherals features. So now they're going to let you turn off the Xbox or turn off the Kinect if you're not using it, which will give you a 10% performance boost. And basically what they said was, what's really crazy about this is that games like Titanfall, which are really pushing the Xbox to, you know, in its current state, to its technological limit, you get what's it called? You get weird artifacts and stuff and tearing in the higher resolution version of the game, and so it doesn't there's at its highest levels it doesn't perform as well as it should. And basically they're like, what probably happened was they were running it and testing it on Xboxes without the Kinect, and so they were able to push it right up to the edge and say, yeah, it works. And then as soon as you got into the real world where everybody's got the Kinect turned on, you get these performance, you'd lose that last 10%, and you guys start to have performance hits at the highest end resolutions and stuff. So now they're saying, you turn that off and you'll be able to run games like Titanfall at full resolution. So they've killed the Kinect. It's done. And
wow. It's
kind of a bummer, because it's a really cool piece of technology and it's got a lot of useful potential. But nobody was ever shown how to do it, quote, do it right. And nobody was ever, you know, it's like, we've talked about it before. We've talked about it. And we'll probably talk about it again as more and more of these sensors that know where you are come out and, you know, get more and more integrated with that. You'll look back at the Kinect and just think, man, how did Microsoft get so far off?
Yeah, I just, clearly they tried something and I don't know. It didn't work. There's a part of me that's disappointed too. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to get one anytime soon because I'm a loser. But there was a part of me that was like, if I were to get one, man, I was really torn between, you know, like the Sony and the Xbox, because I liked the idea of the Kinect and what it could possibly do. And I liked that Jessie would like it, you know?
Right.
And because that would be appealing to her. And now it's like, oh, whatever, it's dead. You know, and I think if I were to get a console now, I would go for Sony. I mean, there's,
it's funny for me. I kind of come from it at the same perspective where I originally, when I started, you know, this whole thing, you know, I'm kind of in a similar place where probably I'm not in any big hurry to get one, but at least if I was, I was definitely on the Microsoft Xbox side of things, because I'll be honest. I'm still prejudiced because I loved the N64 way more than the PlayStation. I thought everybody who thought the PlayStation was cool and cooler than the N64 was an idiot and needed to go and get a real video game system. And it has taken me quite a few years to get over that. But I've come around and I sit there and I go, you know, it's funny where Microsoft has made it less compelling for me to even consider getting a system. See, like, it wasn't like I'm going to get a system, which one do I want, which one is best. It was, I kind of think maybe if I got enough money and enough boredom, I'll get one of the systems. Well, Microsoft has taken, like, made me less excited about it, whereas Sony has actually done the opposite with, you know, just proof, you know, proof is in the pudding of how all the systems responding, how, you know, this and, you know, what they're doing with their online stuff, what they're doing with their Project Morpheus VR stuff. You're like, I get to the point where I'm kind of on the, you know what, James? I actually think I want, if I had enough money, would I get a PlayStation 4? I think I might actually save up a little money and actually put a little money aside to get a PlayStation 4 just for the heck of it. You know, so I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Microsoft is just, they've been floundering. It's annoying.
Satya's done a lot of good, but that is not on that list.
yeah. So.
Oh well.
Right.
So speaking of announcements, they weren't the only ones.
Announcements. So yeah, Apple changed the world this week.
Oh man, did they ever. And let's just be clear, full disclosure here, okay? I own an iMac, I own an iPhone, If I had some sort of tablet, it would be an iPad.
Okay? You do own a tablet.
Now, I do work for HP, which clearly does not run Apple software, but I don't care. That should tell you how much of a fan I am, I guess. Maybe that's the right way to say it. I work for the competition, and I use Apple stuff. So there's my disclosure, so you now know what is about to happen in the next hour plus.
I guess I should disclose too. I am sitting here at my desk. I've got my iMac. Not my iMac. So my Mac Mini. I don't have an iMac. I got my Mac Mini because I like my own screens. I don't want Apple's screens. No, it's all just right. Because it was cheaper and I already had the screens. on top of my iMac is sitting my Apple TV. Next to my next to my Mac Mini is sitting my iPhone. Behind me in my bag is sitting my iPad. But I also, in that same bag, I have a Kindle Paperwhite. At work, I'm sitting right next to me. I have my Microsoft laptop. At work, I use Windows. But yeah, we're kind of Apple fanboys, so
yeah,
we get excited about this. I'll try to be fair. James, you be as unfair as you want to be.
Okay, I'm not even going to try. What I would like to try, and okay, this may not work at all, but yeah, it's probably not going to work at all. But there's two ways that we can go about this. A, we could talk about the different features, and then B, there's some, what I would say, some steps back about Apple and the direction from a whole. You know what I mean?
I think, yeah.
And if we could break them up, I think that would be cool. But we may not.
I'm totally down for that because I think a lot of this will degrade into big picture stuff of what's going on at Apple and what does it mean for the company and the company's future.
True.
But at the same time, if you don't know what the features are, it's difficult to talk about it. So let's just dive into it, James.
All right, so I'm going to use Lifehacker because they were just like, here's a list of all the new features. I'm like, yes, perfect. Thank you.
Perfect.
Which, by the way, I know that you said you were super busy, but did you manage to find 2 hours to watch it?
I was pretty excited that they were live streaming it because I knew if I had to watch it later, I wouldn't. But I live streamed it and watched it, and this is the best part. T-Mobile loves me right now. As I turn off my Wi-Fi, turn on my 4G, and live stream the entire HD 2.5-hour, 2-hour-long pot. So, yeah, my long and short of it is, James, I would have, at this point, the month's not over yet, and I would have cost this an extra $40 in data my first month on T-Mobile. So,
well, thank you.
I'm glad. You're welcome. Well, you
did
know
you hear
what?
Rumor mill is Sprint wants to buy them? So.
I know, I'm not super thrilled about that, but that's why I got contract lists because I can go wherever I want. Anyways, give me a list of features and stuff. I did watch the entire thing and I watched it live.
Excellent. But we'll start with OS X because you care. Which they have the new one, Yosemite.
Yeah,
is the name of it. Is your Mac Mini compatible with it?
Oh heck yeah, man.
Okay, just checking. I don't know.
Everything, I think it's 2007 was the last Mac Mini that won't work on it. And
okay.
Mine's a...
Jesse's MacBook is not listed.
Bummer.
Yep. So I'm just like, sorry. I'm fairly certain it's not listed. So whatever. She doesn't care. If it were me, I'd be like, well, that means I get a new computer, huh? But
right.
That's... she's not me. So the updated... it with Yosemite.
Cool.
And it's got a whole bunch of features. The first one is everything's flat and translucent. Johnny Ive gets what he wants. So that's kind of cool. They like to do the big deal of like, see, you move it around the background and it gives you a sense of space and layers. Cool. I don't know how much I care, but I'm sure I will a lot when it comes out. Notification Center, they made better, I think. Do you use Notification Center on your Mac?
Yeah, occasionally.
Okay, all right.
Usually on accident, I'll be honest.
I use the pop-ups, but
yeah, the pop-ups I use all the time. I'm looking forward to the new because I don't use the notifications on iOS, but given what's coming in iOS, I probably will use it more, which means there's a good chance.
Really?
Once I get in the habit of it, I have a feeling it will that habit will follow me to OS X as well.
Interesting. Yeah, I use them all the time on my phone. I mean, that's the first thing that I look at when I turn on my phone. Interesting. Okay. All right. How about this one? New and improved application launching Spotlight with search and conversion tools and everything else that you would expect it to do.
Yeah, it's cool.
So, I mean, this was the one where everyone like, oh, man, shut across the bow to Google. Look out. And I was like, I guess.
Yeah. Cool. I don't know. I think the whole search engine thing is still not something that Google has to worry about.
Very solved.
I think it's funny. Every time I use, Microsoft, it's just going to be nonstop this week. Okay, guys. So every time I try to search for anything in Windows, it drives me nuts because it just doesn't get what I want when I want it. Whereas with iOS and OS X already, like everything I need and want on my computer, it finds it so quickly. And it just is like, it's so well organized. But anytime you leave the actual hard drive of your device, whether it's the iPhone or your iPad or your Mac, all of a sudden their search stuff just like, it's stupid. It just doesn't do anything good. And then Google takes over and Google's awesome. the problem to me, maybe I'm completely wrong, but the problem is solved and just better integration of those two different, you know, the local micro versus the cloud macro, just making sure that those two communicate well, and that, like, you know, the better, the more omnibar-y the omnibar, the better. That's kind of where I'm
at.
I just want one place to go search for anything and come up with everything I need.
And it looks like they solved my one pain point, which was I had this document that I was searching for, and I was like, I had a PDF version of it, but I needed my Pages version of it so I could edit it. And I'm looking at it going like, I was searching for it, would not show up other than the PDF version. I'm like, dude, I know for a fact there's a Pages version of this. I don't remember where I saved it. I need to use search to find it, and it wasn't showing up, and it was killing me.
And
finally I went, I mean, like, then I started going through folders and looking, and then, I mean, this was a while in.
1995?
Oh, it was crazy. I was just like, where did I put this? And then I finally went, oh, I know where I saved it. iCloud. And Spotlight does not search iCloud. And now they have solved that, and it does. I'm like, good. That was a big miss, in my opinion. They've done more than just allowing iCloud to be searched. They now have it so that you can actually explore. Is that the right word? Are we allowed to use that word? For a Mac, you can now explore the contents of iCloud in a very Dropbox-like manner.
Cool.
Which I thought it was funny in on the Recode Digital Conference or whatever they call it, when they were interviewing Eddie Q and Jimmy Iovine. One of the questions he asked, you know, Walt Mossberg was like, "Dude, all I want is a folder that shows me the contents of my iCloud, whatever." You know, he didn't call it Drive at the time. He's like, my iCloud. He's like, when are you guys going to do that? And Eddie Q was like, feedback noted.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, just wait a couple days, Walt. It's all good.
Yeah.
And
chill out, so man. Yeah.
Yeah, so they've included that, which is cool. And I think we'll talk about pictures later and kind of what's involved with that, because they've semi-solved my picture woes that I've talked about, if I'm willing to pay for it, and you know, which, heck, why not? So also part of our cloud now, they have the photos. You can have everything in iCloud, all of your photos. You make an update on one, it syncs with all of your devices. You can now search for photos, even if they're not on your device, they're in iCloud, and you can get them, which, you know, for a while now, I have not even had even a fraction of my photos on my phone just because I have too many of them, which is cool. But your first 5 gigs are free, and then it's like, what is it? It's $1 for 20 gigs, which is a joke, and then $4 for like 200 gigs, which is starting to get a little closer to what my requirements would be for photos and video. What do you think of that, given our conversations that we've had before about what do we do with all these photos we have?
I'm still conflicted. I like the Apple solution better than anything because I'm paying for it. You know, I've actually, you know, one of the nice parts about having a job is that I don't need everything to be free. And I have found that, you know, my expectation with Apple is I put the bar higher, not because it's Apple, but because I'm paying for it, you know, and, you know, I expect more continuity. I expect, you know, longer term. I like the idea of being able to pass everything back and forth. You know, I am going to get at some point, I do have to sit down and make sure that I'm not spending too much money on Apple services. You know, I got to,
as it's, because you know, what is it? iTunes Connect or something like that.
iTunes Match.
Yeah.
Which I'm really, it's funny. I almost got, so this is how much of an Apple dweeb I am. So Sunday we were at this concert, right? It's an all day event. And it was really cool. It was really great. I'm sitting there thinking, I had been using Spotify all week long, and actually even prior to that, doing what we call show prep, which is, it's the same term I use for the show, which confuses people sometimes, but it's, I basically listen to the music of the different artists, especially the ones that are less known, so that when I get there, I can fully enjoy their music because I know their music. It makes especially with huge festivals like that, you could spend like 4 hours watching bands that you've never heard a song of theirs, whereas if you know their music, you can actually really enjoy it. So anyways, I've been using Spotify, but I didn't want to pay for Spotify, and because I haven't been paying for any of these music services. Now I've got iTunes. I've got unlimited skips and no commercials with iTunes Radio, which is the reason why I use it probably more than most Apple employees, evidently, as I've been reading.
I like iTunes Radio. I listen to it all the time.
I do too, and I think and it's unique in that I think we listen to it more than Apple employees do. And they use Spotify, Pandora, and yeah. And so finally there was like, well, okay, my interest has been piqued on this whole Beats thing. This is the direction it's going. So yeah. I downloaded Beats. They got like a free like month trial.
14-day trial, yeah.
It's the same price as Spotify, 10 for the pro. It's $10 a month. But then I was like, man, I wonder if Apple will like just sort of kind of combine my accounts as they all come together. If they're going to be like, you know, if at some point that you know, login credentials that I have for iTunes will just carry over to Beats and all of a sudden Beats music, and all of a sudden I'll have access to Beats music. And then I was thinking about it and I remembered, oh, wait, this is Apple. That's definitely not going to happen. They're just going to raise the price on me. And I'm going to lose ad-free iTunes Radio unless I'm willing to pay enough to get Beats Radio, which Beats Music, which is just that's a bummer waiting to happen. But that all kind of, you know, but it's something to think about because it's like with this music stuff and yeah, I think the pictures make sense, and I've finally run out of room on my I'm running out of room on what's it called, that Dropbox, and they keep notifying me, you're running out of room, leave me alone. You know, and I haven't found this.
What do you put on your Dropbox folder? Or how big is it? Let's start with that. What do you put in your Dropbox folder and how big is it?
Oh, all sorts of stuff. Work stuff, documents, creative documents, pictures. I have no idea how big it is. And then on top of all of this, I'm leaving to the reason why we're doing the show on Thursday instead of a Friday is because I'm heading to Singapore on tomorrow evening. And so I'm going to be on a plane for 17,000 hours. And I was thinking, I was like, man,
is it 17 hours? I can't remember what it is. Is that how long it is?
It's
like 10 and 7 or something, or 9 and 8.
Well, it's going to Hong Kong. It's like 13 hours because you're going to the headwinds.
Oh, you go to Hong Kong, not Japan.
Yeah, and then from Hong Kong to Singapore is another like 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
So thankfully they let us get off the plane in Hong Kong. They're kind of that way.
Did I tell you about my going to Singapore experience? It literally was we went to Japan and then Singapore. So it was like – it was something like 10 hours and then 7 hours or something like that, right? They're both like really long flights. We got into Japan, and because of the way the timing worked, there was an hour layover. And they like – they make you get off and go through customs and all that stuff anyways. But they knew it, and so we literally got off the plane. I got in line outside the gate of the airplane, walked through, and – my same airplane was going on to Singapore. I turned around and got back on the airplane. And
I have a feeling that that's what my experience is going to be like.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. And I was like, well, at least I got to walk around and stretch a little bit. That's cool. And sat for another 7 hours.
I'm pretty sure that's exactly what my flight's going to be. And they're gonna make me get off so that they can do a short clean sweep, and then I'm not even gonna be able to leave the terminal before I gotta get back on the plane for another 4 hours.
Yeah,
and the worst part, well, worst, I you know, maybe it's a blessing, maybe it's a curse, but that seat, I'm literally at the same seat for both legs. So
nice.
I'm gonna get off and go to the bathroom is all. I'm actually not looking. The long and short of the reason I brought this up is because I want to put videos on my phone, and I've got a 64 gig iPhone. I've only got 2.3 gigs available, and mostly I've got 9 gigs of music, which is astounding, and I've got 9 or like 10 gigs of photos and just photo stuff. Yeah, so but I take a lot of videos and stuff, so maybe that's where and I'm just like, this is not good. I've got to figure out what I'm going to do with my life, because I've got all this content. I want to be able to watch stuff, Lego Movie and whatnot. But I don't know. I think it's interesting. I'm probably going to put off buying it for a little while and keep on hobbling along with the free model.
I'm probably very similar. I will want to hear reviews of it after it's been out for like 3 to 6 months. Before I'm interested, but I don't know. We'll see. So, iCloud, photos, that kind of stuff. They also powered up the Mail app. Do you use Apple's built-in Mail app?
I use it to check read all on my Gmail email because it's better at that than Gmail is, and that's it. That's all I use it for.
Oh, all right. Well, then you don't care about any of the changes. I use it all the time. They sound okay. Safari, streamlined faster, like always, as you would expect. More interestingly is continuity.
This is actually everything up to that point I was kind of like, that's fine, whatever, I don't care. But now we get into what I think is actually cool.
So continuity is you get a text message. It shows up on your phone, your laptop, and your iPad. It doesn't matter if it's a blue box or a green box, which means it doesn't matter if they're on an iOS device or not. You will receive all text messages now on all your devices, which is cool. Even cooler, someone gives you a phone call. You can answer that on your Mac or your iPad, and it will act as essentially a Bluetooth – it's not Bluetooth, but a Bluetooth speakerphone type thing. For that, which is kind of crazy, kind of cool. It also has a feature called handoff, where if you're working on, say, an email, or you're surfing a page, and just for whatever reason, and I guess this happens to people, you are like, oh, I need to switch over to my Mac. It'll actually pop up as a little icon there saying, oh yeah, here you go, go use it. And then vice versa, if you're composing an email on your Mac and you're like, you know what, I'm just sick of the keyboard, I need to go over to a touch screen. You go look at your phone, there'll be a little icon there for whatever the app is that you're using. It could be iCloud, iWork or something. It'll be there, you tap it, and lo and behold, it'll open up the app right where you left off. It'll hand it right off to you. The other one, which you may be interested in, I don't know, is the Instant Hotspot. You don't have a laptop, so...
I am interested in it that I have, you know, hotspot data now, but I'm uninterested in it that I have a Mac Mini and Wi-Fi. Dang it. But...
Yeah, so what do you think about those features where things are continuous?
So this is when we're going to take a big picture look back. What I really like about this, and actually another feature that they added that they haven't really talked about, and this is kind of iOS 8, this is where we start to make the bridge to iOS 8, right?
Yeah.
And this whole everything works together in concert. One of the things that's driven me nuts about AirPlay is I really like it, but one of the shortcomings of it is it requires an established Wi-Fi network, which means I can't just take one of the things that I really was kind of hoping for with my Apple TV was that I would be able to bring my Apple TV to a friend's house, plug it into the wall, plug it into their TV, and then at that point use my phone to start streaming stuff. But what you'd have to do first is you'd have to set up your – they would have to have Wi-Fi. You'd have to set up your phone on their Wi-Fi. You'd have to set up your Apple TV on their Wi-Fi. And then once you did that, you could start doing AirPlay, which is kind of annoying. And furthermore, like, even if you just went over to a friend's house who already had Wi-Fi, had everything set up, you still wouldn't be able to just, like, you know, go and do Wi-Fi. You know, you still have to set up your Wi-Fi. So that was kind of a limitation of the whole thing. Well, now it supports ad hoc networks, right? So now you can do it directly. You don't have to go through an established Wi-Fi network, which is pretty cool. And why this is a big deal is because it's essentially like this slow integration that the slow iteration that Apple does of taking something that works pretty cool, keeping back a couple of obvious features to test it out, make sure it works right, and then slowly add these extra features. And it's part of this whole movement to expand their Bluetooth audio, to expand how AirPlay works, because it's basically the same technology, the same idea. And, you know, eventually what I want is I want all my devices to be able to share content back and forth, you know, seamlessly over Bluetooth and everything. And the whole idea of using your phone as your cellular connection and then having it send over, you know, particular information. And the strategy that a lot of companies take is just to, you know, open up on, you know, you connect over Wi-Fi and then all the data goes through, right? And you can just do anything, which is kind of the Google way of doing it, because this isn't something that's exclusive to Apple's able to do it. But what Apple can do that other people can't is they set up these, you know, specific types of data, and they give them low level, you know, OS or not low level OS, where you're getting closer and closer to your core, you know, assembly stuff, and which means they're able to, even though there's through those limitations of the limited number of things that it can do, even though it seems like it should be obvious for it to do other things, they're able to do the small specific tasks very, very well. And then they just slowly keep adding more and more tasks that it can do very, very well. And I like it. I like it because it's, you know, it's the direction they've been moving, and it's just a continued, you know, movement in that direction. And as time goes on, there'll be more and more features that you'll think, gosh, now that I'm using this, I really wish I could do that. And eventually that'll come as well. And, you know, and it's cool. I like it, especially since I'm using, I have an Apple TV and an iPad and an iMac, blah, 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 blah. Makes me want to not use a Mac at work for sure. And I want a laptop so that I can take my laptop with me and I don't have to use this, my friggin', Windows laptop.
Dude, I seriously have those thoughts too. I'm like, man, if I were to start my own business, I'd base it all off of Apple products.
I would
bite the expense bullet because the productivity would be so much higher.
Yeah, it's funny. I keep having to talk myself out of buying a MacBook Air 11-inch. Mm. Like, you think I totally would use it. I totally would use it. And then I'm like, yeah, but you could use other things. Don't do that.
Don't do that. But stop.
Yeah, use it, because I'm like, I could use my Mac Mini as the best processor I could get, the most RAM, this is my, quote, powerful computer. And it's actually a very powerful computer. Mm-hmm. Then my Air would be just basically a keyboard computer to go with me, runs OS X, I can program on it, blah, 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 blah. My iPad would be the, it's stupid. But one of the big things is that that this whole continuity thing, and this is going to be, I feel like, a recurring idea, is that Apple has, like, built this ecosystem where they've got all these really, really cool features and cool selling points and cool things that it can do, but it only makes sense if you're like us and where you've got the whole ecosystem of different Apple devices. And it really, like, it kind of gets to the point where they're designing a system that will be very difficult to mix and match. If you have a Android tablet, it won't make any sense to keep it with the rest of your Mac stuff. You know, you can get a Windows things and it'll work. It'll do the basic functions, but it won't do the really cool things. Like, they are just building this whole, the whole idea of continuity is, you know, is one based around really making, you know,
making. Well, it's funny. I was reading something and they were like, you know, don't think of Apple as a hardware and software company as we've characterized them before. Like, think of them as an ecosystem company. Because that, honestly, is what they are trying to make. It isn't the intersection of hardware and software that makes them awesome. It's the fact that they all work together is what makes them awesome. And, yeah, it's the way that happens is through hardware and software and now the cloud. But it's not just the fact that it's a consistent feel and UI. It's, no, they literally do interoperate with each other. And,
it's got power. It's funny. I mean, and it's, you know, that whole, we've been talking about the Apple eco, the walled garden, you know, for years and years and years. And it's just like the walled garden is becoming, you know, a fortressed garden. It's ridiculous. You know, it's so hard to, and yet at the same time, it's probably a good time to kind of shift gears fully into iOS 8. At the same time, I'll tease this. In unprecedented ways, they're opening up iOS 8 to the rest of the world, and they're bringing down the wall. What's your question?
So, free download for everybody. Can get into the beta program. I know you're in the developer program. Are you rocking Yosemite right now?
I'm not. And I'm glad I'm not, because I am using OS X. But not OS X. I'm using
OS X.
Xcode 6, and as I keep teasing, it's a big enough of a challenge for everything to work right on one piece of software. I figure mixing the cocktails of iOS 8, Yosemite, and Xcode probably more than I have the patience to deal with. So I'm gonna take it one step at a time. I might let them get a couple of the betas out before I dive into getting
Fair enough. iOS 8 was also announced.
Yes.
Those of you who are dead and didn't know about it.
I know, right?
The look is the same.
Again. Yes.
All right, I'm going to cheat now, and I'm going to take a step back too, and we'll dive into some of these. Is this what I wanted to do? No. All right. We'll start with, again, the surface level consumer level stuff, and then I've got a bigger statement to make about their strategy here. So they added more widgets to Notification Center, just like with the Mac, and so you will no longer just have your like three choices. You can have other stuff, which is why you said you start using it more. Cool, I guess. Another big deal that you don't care about, but I do and I think a lot of other people do, is family sharing.
Yes.
Up to six people, which is cool. I know people who have had shared iCloud accounts. I mean, heck, our mom and sister, they share one for that exact reason, and now they don't have to. Awesome.
Yeah.
So that's good. So that's cool. And Jesse and I will definitely be taking advantage of that. It's funny, like, sometimes we'll get movies on iTunes, and I'll be like, so who do I think will watch this more than the other person?
Yeah,
I have to make those types of choices, and we don't have to. We already talked about the iCloud stuff. They've created interactive notifications. people were pumped about that. Pumped. And I was like, okay, I get that you don't have to leave the app you're in anymore to reply really quick. So that's cool, I guess. But wow, people were pumped about it.
I'm a little bit excited about it.
Oh, okay. All right. You're part of that crew.
Cool. It's cool, you know. It's I can. Well, it's funny. I use enough of those features where I don't use. You know, I try to use non-app because like you could do Twitter and app and Facebook right posts directly, which and like with Siri and stuff. And
well, I'm not talking about. Okay, I'm talking about notifications right now. But
but you could. You originally you could do Twitter and Facebook through Notification Center, and that was a cool feature that I did use. They got rid of that in iOS 8. They're basically bringing that back with a whole, you know, with everything else, which is very cool. I like that. I'm glad they're doing it.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Third-party keyboards? Actually, no. Let's skip that one, because that's part of my other thing. Okay, so they've got recent menu for contacts. So you got your people little Facebook bubbles up top. They also got new mail gestures, spotlight enhancements, which is cool.
Yay.
Predictive typing, which is cool. The new message features, so you can, which actually sounds interesting. They essentially took it looks like the best of WhatsApp and Snapchat and said, here, we'll just build it in natively. You're welcome.
Yeah. I really like, because you and I have tried to do the whole video sharing, the video texting thing, and, you know, I like it. Yeah. I think sometimes it's totally more useful in audio stuff, and it's like, they're finally, you know, that stuff's coming along, and I like it. I think
that'll be cool. Turns out the messaging app is the number one used app by far, so they decided to get some love. So you're like, cool. That's very cool. Another one is some Siri improvements where if it's plugged in, you go, hey, Siri,
seriously?
Instead of, okay, Google, and it will work.
Yeah. Okay,
so,
Siri.
Those are some of the consumer-facing stuff. One of the things that I've noticed in this, and someone else wrote about it too, was that Apple has made a subtle shift in their strategy and where they focus their time and energy. And I think it's very interesting. I think if you think back on the last few years of their releases, it was about Apple releasing new apps and services.
Yeah.
You know, it was always about, man, which app developer did they just destroy? You know?
Yeah.
And they did a little bit of that today. I mean, I just talked about the WhatsApp and Snapchat, which is not going to destroy them, but, you know, there's a little bit of that there. But one of the things that they're doing now is they're really focusing on the platform and creating platforms for other apps for developers to play around with and thrive in, and that's part of their whole new kit naming nomenclature. I'll run through some examples and then we can focus in where you want. Like with their health, sure, they've got an app, but more importantly, it's a API with HealthKit that allows app developers to plug in and add information and take information from it. For home automation, it's not an app per se, it's, hey, you know, here's an API where now people can do settings, like the example they gave with Siri, where it was like, set up for bedtime and it'll dim the lights and make sure your doors are locked and your garage door is locked and all that stuff. And again, it's you still are using third-party apps. They haven't replaced anything. Just like the health, they don't replace those apps. They enhance them. They enhance the home automation. The other one was like the third-party keyboards. They're saying, hey, we're going to now allow other keyboards to be in here and let other app developers have fun with this. Same with extensions, which they explicitly called out Safari, and it sounds like that'll work across other browser or other apps as well, where, hey, you know what, we're not going to add our own, you know, Twitter share and Facebook share. Sure, we have that because we've already made it, but now we're going to let third-party people build whatever they want as well in terms of sharing and doing extensions, you know, which is cool. And then their new 3D graphics engine, right? It's not about just making their apps cool. It's about enabling other app developers to 3D-fy their apps. And and then like Touch ID, right? Where it's sure, first they used it for them, and now they're opening it up to everyone to say, hey, here's, you can start to use this for authentication purposes. So again, it's this subtle shift of, really felt the last few years the emphasis was on, here's what we've made, which is new and awesome, and we're replacing other stuff and consolidating. And now they're kind of going in the opposite direction of like, and now we're going to build out infrastructure for you guys to build awesome and amazing things and build on top of it and create new apps that we literally could not have imagined earlier as a result of it.
One of the things that I think is interesting about this is that I've always been a big fan of that, is, you know, as a tech guy, you know, there's a balance, right? It's, you want it to work. You don't want to be able to add stuff that's going to break your iPhone. You don't want things that are going to destroy your battery, you're going to slow it down, you're going to make it pointless. You know, but at the same time, you also want freedom to try out new and cool things. And that's always been the big knock against the iPhone, is that it's like, you know, you can't do third party keyboards. You know, but Apple's argument has always been keyboards, you know, third party keyboards, how do you know it's not going to have a keylogger built in? Like, seriously, like, you don't know that. And, you know, there are some good ones out there that are probably trustworthy, but you just don't know, and it's difficult to know. And so basically Apple's coming in and saying, so we're going to do it in a way you can trust. Same with the thumbs, you know, Touch ID.
Touch ID.
But every single one of these, what I think is really interesting about them is they – Apple – or not every single one, but by and large, what Apple did was they built – a very specific use case for, you know, responding to, you know, like you said, sharing with Twitter and Facebook, responding through different things, using Siri for this, using Touch ID, using this. And then what they did is they basically took it and they took this framework and they spent a lot of time figuring out how to, quote, do it right within the framework of their own technology. And then they stripped it out of all of its usefulness, and there's left this framework, these quote core APIs that they used that were secret APIs that they had built for their own internal use that nobody else could access because, you know, it was for their own internal use, or rather you couldn't legally access. You could actually access them through, like, if you jailbroke your phone, but you couldn't publish an app that used it in the App Store. And so basically what you have here is you've got this, you know, now you've got these API calls that did exist, and they've gone through all the debugging and they've gone through everything, and they can basically say they are secure, they are robust, and you can now use them openly, and then, which is really, really neat. And it's a cool strategy because it's, you know, it takes longer than other platforms, you know, Android, to get that kind of features out there. And that's one of the big criticisms, is like, of a lot of the new stuff they're doing was like, Android could do that forever ago. Why is this a big deal? Like, well, it's a big deal because it's robust and secure, and it only took 2 years. Like, you know, and I mean that in it only took 2 years. These are platforms that are, you know, that, you know, in a day and age when literally everybody has, you know, they, over half of Americans have lost or have their, you know, credit card stolen in the last year is the estimate, right? I mean, it's like in a time where security is just crazy and malware is rampant on Android, doing this in a way that is a little bit, you know, slow but and careful is not something that I'm afraid of. And I really like the fact, especially because it's like, you know, with HomeKit sounds awesome, right? Because it opens up your entire home and you know, you're going to be able to, there's been a lot of devices that we've talked about on the show that are dedicated devices meant to act as the hub of your digital home. Everything will talk to that. They basically have smartphone, you know, it has an Android operating system on it. Everything talks to that, and then that talks to your phone. So it's, well, you know, Apple's now replacing that. The iPhone's going to handle all that for you. But the thing is that, like, and why this is important is you're giving basically access to your entire home network to the internet. Like, it's important you do that carefully, because if it's done improperly, somebody can hack your phone and unlock your door. And that's like this, you know, you think of that one as the scary one, because, oh, somebody can get in. But what's worse, they can study you. They can get all sorts of information from you. They can get your, you know, and so you want to be careful about that. And HealthKit, Apple's putting a big push to make this a legitimate health platform, which means your actual health data is going to be there. Doctors are going to use this. That's their goal. They want this to be a health thing. And you sit there and you go, so all my health data is going to be sitting on my phone. I want that to be robust. I want that to be secure. I want that to be trustworthy. And Apple took their time and tried to do their best to do that. You know, not just have it be medically accurate, which is, you know, you'd think is first and foremost, but I honestly, I'd rather have it be secure before it was accurate. Because accuracy will come. Security, if you don't do it right at the beginning, usually, you know, it just becomes worse as time goes on. And especially one of the things that it does make me like think about is the Supreme Court case that was heard earlier this year, asking, you know, can a police officer, you know, take your phone, and are you quote securing your papers when they grab your phone at a traffic stop, and do they have access to everything? And you're just like, this could get so crazy, because it's, you know, it in a hypothetical sense, access to all of my financial records, all of my medical records, all of my blah, blah, blah was on my phone. But that's kind of hypothetical, because I don't really keep all of my health records on my phone. I don't really keep all of my house data on my phone. It's just generally that kind of stuff is accessible at using my phone as a starting point, especially because a lot of my passwords are already on there. But now all of that will be on my phone. Direct access to my home will be on my phone. If you pull me over and you can now unlock the doors to my house, is my, you know, like, what the heck? It's craziness. So it's important that this stuff is done carefully, but at the same time, it's like, you know, but at the same time, I want to be able to do it. You know, it's the future. The future is now. So I do have a question. Do you think you're going to get a new keyboard for your phone?
You know what? I've tried swipe a few times, and I don't know. I must be a Luddite or something. Or maybe I'm not a good enough typer. And I'm just like, I don't get it. I don't get all the hype.
The only thing I care about is predictive spelling. If your predictive spelling, what I want is the best predictive spelling. And my experience with swipe keyboards has been, not that they're not cool, because I can type very fast, but what slows me down is their predictive spelling generally has a much smaller vocabulary than I do, which makes me feel very superior, but also extremely annoyed. Because they come across as a gimmick. They're designed for, you know, they're designed to okay, I'm swiping and it can read the swipes, but they're not designed for heavy duty typing. And I find I don't know. It's funny. My first thought was, man, if Microsoft decides that they want to take on the keyboard.
Yeah, given your reviews, I'd be interested in that.
Oh my good! Without hesitation, I would bump Apple for Microsoft if they were to put out a keyboard.
The only problem is that Apple's not going to share any of your swipe, you know, your key data with you. If I were an keyboard designer, I would want to know where people are missing, so that, you know what I mean, so I could improve the product. It could be anonymous, aggregated, whatever. I don't care. But
they'll give you an app. They'll give you an. They say default. It's non internet connected. But you can actually, when you install it, you can request access, or you can require access. So you know, you can have like three different modes. Yeah. Because I completely agree. You know, the feedback is what makes it important. Apple gets all the feedback.
Yeah, it's got to learn.
But at the same time, like, I don't know. It's cool. I might move over, because if you get something that just if you get something that is like all it is a keyboard, but it is the best predictive spelling in the universe, I'd move over so fast you'd make your neck snap. But you know, I gotta see the proof is in the pudding. I'm interested to see how well Apple's works out, because you know, they pretended like it was pretty awesome, this, you know, this new stuff that they were doing with it, but you know. So all right, James. So did you yeah.
I was gonna say, are we gonna take a step back or?
Well, there was one last announcement that we that you haven't covered yet.
Yes, you're right. You're right.
And I was just wondering, did you actually watch the keynote?
I did.
Okay. So I have a question, James. When you heard that there was going to be three parts to this keynote, what was your reaction?
Cool. I was not expecting hardware.
Yeah, well, I wasn't expecting hardware either by the time they got to it, but
you're expecting an Apple SDK or an Apple TV SDK?
I don't
SDK,
know.
Or?
Yeah, Apple TV. I don't know what I was expecting, because they did it so strangely. Well, what's so funny is, in retrospect, it was that what they said was just obvious. It was like, yeah, this is what it is. But at the same time, like, you know, but when they said it, you're like, and then a development focus section. You're like, what does that mean? Like, a develop? Isn't this the Worldwide Developer Conference? Isn't this all supposed to be development focus? I don't get it. But yeah, so okay. So Apple launched a new programming language on Monday called Swift.
Is it amazing? Have you tried it yet?
So yeah, when they got to that part of the keynote, it's funny. I was actually lagging a little bit behind, because I kept having my boss interrupt me with work things to do.
Oh, I hate it when they do that.
Yeah, it's awful. And so I kept having to hit pause, and I was trying to figure out, like, you know, so I got anxious and would go in to look at the live blogs and see what the live blogs were talking about. And I saw them talk about Swift, and I had no idea what it was. It looks like an app with the icon that they gave it. So I was like, what is this? I'm interested to hear it. And so when I finally got to that section of the broadcast, I was like, I saw it, and I was just like, whoa, like, what are they doing? This is really crazy. This is super exciting. And, you know, because I'm a bit of a tech dork in that I'm actually, like, I make a better tech fanatic than I do engineer, because I really get into the history of this stuff and the theory behind the different languages and why do they do things the way they do that. And so I was really excited when they made this announcement, because it's just cool to see this sort of thing develop, in my opinion. And even outside of the actual practicality of being able to program with it. But basically what they said was, you know, Coke or Objective-C's treated them very well. And so, like, if you don't know the history of programming languages, you start with assembly, machine code, right? It's the very – it's basically the instruction sets are – they started out as 8-bit and then became 16-bit instruction sets, and 32, 64 as the processor gets bigger. But then these very small instruction sets, and there's, like – small computers have, like, 20 different instructions that they can do. Big instruction sets get up to, like, 100. But the thing is that, like, these instruction sets are designed in such a way that literally everything your computer does is some combination of those small number of instruction sets. You know, all the different looping, all the different graphics, all of it is based on these small instruction sets. And so what programming languages are is essentially assembly was an easier way to write machine code, the ones and zeros. You didn't have to write the instruction sets out. You basically had a small word-based thing that it would allow you to put the instruction set. That's kind of what Steve Wozniak's big genius was putting an interface and an execution and a communication all in together so you could write BASIC. which is what that kind of original stuff was. And BASIC was the next step. We're gonna do more complicated things in assembly, because as you program, you realize there's certain tasks that you always do the same way, and you just wish you didn't have to write it out as much, because it just becomes these bigger and bigger texts. And so the evolution of language is always to try to do something that everybody is doing in a more streamlined way. BASIC became C. C then kind of like became this, took a split path. One path became C++, C#. The other became Objective-C. And what they were this idea of you were going to build objective language objects in language, which is the next iteration, right? And so what was really weird about Objective-C, though, is that Objective-C is basically, what if we took C and made objects using C? Whereas C++ is, what if we made objects and made it compatible with C? Which doesn't sound like a very big difference, but fundamentally, it just like a huge difference in how the language is written and read and compiled. And it made Objective-C incredibly difficult to write and to actually execute, to program in. And Apple stuck with it for the last decade and a half, because why would you change? and which was kind of one of the big frustrations when the App Store first launched, is they were like, we're going to launch this cool new thing called Cocoa Touch. And everybody's like, wow, it's this cool new programming language. And they're like, basically, it's just another library on top of Objective-C. It's the exact same language written the exact same way. We're just going to allow you to do more things with it automatically. Huh. Everybody's like, you've got to be kidding me. I got to learn Objective-C. And like, that was the big complaint. People had been avoiding Objective-C for decades or a decade. And all of a sudden, it's the biggest platform out there. You have to learn the language. At the same time, C++ became really and truly like there was this new programming language that people were trying to get into, which was after C++ was well established, which was Java. Java gave way to your first scripting languages, your first popular scripting language in JavaScript, which is what executes on your computer. At the same time, PHP and Ruby and Python and all these other scripting languages. And what they're designed to be are these really quick, easy to program languages, very, very powerful, because it takes very little to do a lot. And they do it very quickly. Whereas with like, you know, and so at the same time, like, you've got these really powerful languages that are really smart and relatively easy to learn. And then you've got Objective-C and Cocoa, like the most advanced operating system in the world, and it uses this archaic, incredibly difficult to use language. And it's just like, it made everything, there was a high bar to entry. You know, iOS has been accredited with the app revolution is accredited with this, like, this low bar to entry, right? And all of a sudden, Apple, you know, uses a language that just keeps the bar high, you know, because it's so hard to use and learn. And I've been a developer for 6-7 months now, 8 months, and I've got like 3 apps to work. And I know what I'm doing. Like, I got A's in all my programming classes, and I took a lot of programming classes, and I had an incredibly difficult time getting anything to work in Objective-C. And I'm not alone in that world. It's just like you got to think about it differently. But I was trained on Java, which Android is written in Java. Basically, it's a fork of Java, basically. And so Android's relatively easy to program in, and which is, you know, one of the big credits to Android. Well, Apple finally fixed that, and what's so exciting about this is they basically said, we're going to take Python and everything that's really cool and groovy about Python and how easy it is to execute. We're going to take the power of these Macs, and we're going to say a Mac is way, 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 way more powerful than an iPhone. It's got my iMac's got 16 gigs of RAM. My iPhone's got 1 gig. It's got an i7 processor. My iPhone's got the A6, A7, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just way more powerful. So what we're going to do is we're basically going to say, we're going to take Python and we're going to make a new layer of Objective-C. We're going to completely replace it. And we're going to make it look like Python, so it's easy to execute. And then we're going to make a development platform that simulates the iPhone so quickly that you can basically code and execute things in real time. It just happens as you're going.
At the same time. Cool.
It's not perfect. Let me tell you. Now, I'm looking at the little Xcode icon that I have, and it's got a beta flag clearly across it. It wants you to know that this is not a full-blown version of Xcode, which is good, because this thing... I tried to basically one of the cool features that it has is you can look at the history of different values. So it's like I had something that was running a loop, and it was supposed to show me what the value stored in this one variable was over time as it executed. And I clicked on the button to look at this value, and my computer did one of the craziest things I've ever seen a graphics card do, as it just puked all over my screen and Windows went crazy and icons exploded and everything, and then just like, and Xcode just crashed. I was like, whoa, okay, should not have done that. And then I went to click to close it, and I realized my computer was like locking up like crazy. I've got the RAM keeper on my computer, so I can see how much RAM I've got free and stuff.
Yeah.
And I had a quarter of a gig free. I've got 16 gigs of RAM. I mean, my computer just like went from the graphics card just gave way, and then it just filled my entire RAM with whatever, and who knows what it was doing. And then, you know, and then my iMac came crashing down, and I got to restart. I was like, well, that's that's the perks of using a beta. sometimes it does crazy stuff. I have no idea what it was that I did and how and why I broke it, because when I restarted the program, I put the same code in there. It executed just fine and did what it was supposed to do. But the big thing that is here is that I basically used it for an hour and did the equivalent of 7 hours worth of coding that I had done previously.
Wow.
I mean, it is just the if you know how to code any language, this is super easy. If you get the basics of how code is structured and you kind of know the jargon of what's a class, what's an object,
really?
What's a function, what's a variable, what's a constant, what are these supposed to be used for, stuff like that. Somebody was talking about, I read an article, somebody said that they were able to completely clone Angry Birds in Swift in an hour. And I totally believe it. I totally believe it. Because Angry Birds is a relatively simple game to begin with, and Swift makes it just like, it's just, because it's Swift. What's really neat about it, and actually what I mean, and this is the dork me coming out, what I get excited about it is that it's the same compiler, or it's an extension of the compiler, which means that like where C++, a C++ compiler will compile C, because they added that in, whereas a C compiler will compile Objective-C, which is a different direction. I mean, and that's, once again, it doesn't feel like a big difference, but it's a huge difference fundamentally what it's doing. And, you know, obviously you have to add in libraries and you have to tell it how to do it. But that's what they've done with Swift is basically that. They've said they have used Objective-C objects and Objective-C shell stuff and taken the LLMB, the low logic, something VM, whatever, I can't remember what it stands for, but the compiler that compiles C and then compiles that into Objective-C and then compiles Objective, and they've built Swift on top of all of this. And why that's significant is because if you've written a program that uses Cocoa and uses Objective-C and has C and even has assembly already all in there, and it's all, you know, it's all running fine, it will compile just the same in Swift as it will in, you know, if it's, it'll compile just the same, which is really cool, because there's all this legacy code that they're just moving along. And why this is all exciting is because, you know, Apple does not get a lot of credit for being innovative, or they get bashed a lot for, oh, they're not being innovative, or, oh, they're not great engineers. They're just, you know, it's just a pretty package and, you know, and marketing. But you're like, no, this is the sort of thing that makes Apple incredible. This is the reason why I love Windows, is because Windows is reverse compatible with 2.5 decades of programs. It's incredible what you can do with Windows. I mean, it's just absurd. Now, there is some weird legacy stuff going on that makes it that can be very difficult to work with. But that sort of stability and longevity is what gave people the initiative to build things for Windows and just for Windows, because they knew it would be around, because they were dedicated to making sure that the old stuff would work in the future. And that's exactly what Apple's doing here. Is they're saying, hey, look, we're introducing these new powerful tools and we want everybody to use them because they're new and powerful and awesome, but we're going to support the old stuff. Don't you worry. And, you know, and it's just, it's cool. It's really a unique, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I hate to become like a full on diehard Apple fanboy this episode, but this is the kind of engineering that I love. You know, this is what I get excited about all this stuff for, is it's like, you know, this is like, yeah, this is awesome. They're doing it right. You know, they're not, you know, they're not casting aside and doing virtual machines. They're sticking to the fundamentals of computer science, and they're building it the way it should be built. You know, building it for the past and the future.
I'm going to be honest, man. You're inspiring me right now to want to go off and build something. I'm like,
I don't blame you.
I know. I don't have time for it. So stop. But
I know, right?
I'm like, man. Well, and the worst part is, I actually did this programming project a few weeks ago, because I was optimizing. Let me take a step back here. So I actually do a lot of our property management stuff online, and I just built my own tools because that's the way I am, and because I could, and I wanted it a certain way, and so I was doing some optimization stuff because there were some things that I did it fast to get it done, and because I wanted just something that I could use. And now I've been using it for like 6 months, and I'm like, you know what? This could be done better. And so I did it better, and it's fantastic. I like it. So all that to say, I stepped back into the world a couple weeks ago, and was like, yes, this feels good. I love it. But you know, that's all HTML and PHP and SQL stuff, and you know, it's different, right? LAMP stack things. But I'm like, man, that was fun. You know, and now like you hear this and I hear the stuff you're talking about, I'm like, I'm sitting in my head going, man, how cool would this be? And you know, in the back of my head too, I'm part of this real estate investor club where every week we invest, where we run numbers and, you know, analyze properties. And like, I've got a whole spreadsheet that I can't bring or don't use there, you know. So like, and I'm like, man, how cool would it be just to have my spreadsheet sitting in my phone? And I'm not about to pay the stupid amounts of money that Microsoft is asking for in order to edit spreadsheets. I'm not going to happen. And because they're being way too greedy. But I might be willing to trade my time to create something. You know, but so yeah, I just find myself sitting there, man, that actually does sound genuinely awesome.
It's and it's funny. I mean, yeah, I shrug my shoulders on this.
Is it hard to make a calculator? Is that like a hard thing to make?
Wait, what?
Like
a calculator?
A calculator? I mean, that's all that it really is. It's a complicated calculator.
I'll be honest, I don't think so. I'm right now what I'm doing is I'm working through Apple's little Swift book. And it's 800 pages long, so I'm probably going to have to skip sections. But it's thorough, is what I've read. And it's funny because I'm doing like the brief tour. And
do you need to know how? Do you need to know how to program? I mean, well, I don't want to say, do you need to know how to program to use it? Does it start with that fundamental basics? But like, what background do you need in order to get started with Swift? Like, should you know Objective-C or at least the broad strokes of it?
There is some terminology that, instead of practicing coding, what I would do is read textbooks, which is not the same. It's actually pretty useless. It's just interesting if you're like me. I read it for entertainment's sake, which I just don't understand at this point in my life. But it's one of those things where a lot of the jargon and the terminology that they use, there are unique terminologies that they use in Objective-C that they don't use in other languages, or they don't use very extensively in other languages. That's useful. But honestly, Google it. Just hit define or whatever. Read about it in Wikipedia, and it'll explain, oh, okay, this is what this is. It's like, have you ever used a dictionary as opposed to a 2D array?
Sure. No, I don't know.
Well, so I've a 2D array is something before.
Yeah, I've used a 2D array before.
Yeah, which, like, everybody's used that, kind of like an array of arrays. Well, a dictionary is basically an array of arrays, except it's you put in something, and it's a key for something else. I mean, but it's an Objective-C thing. It's you don't really use it anywhere else. If you were to Google that for 5 minutes, you'd learn what it was, and you'd understand what it was supposed to be, and all of a sudden, you know, you'd be able to use it in Swift, and it's cool, but there are little things like that. They do not spend any time talking about classes and objects and functions and variables. They just assume you understand that. Okay.
I know how those work. I mean, I know how they work for Apple, but I know what those are. Okay, all right.
Right.
Thinking in my head, you know, this may be... Oh, I don't have time for this. Oh, man.
You actually learned programming in Java, right?
Yeah.
I think you'd find it pretty comfortable. Okay. I think you'd find it pretty comfortable. It actually has less syntax than Java, but... It has a mountain less syntax than Objective-C.
Nice. I learned Perl too, and that was one where, like you, I read the book for fun, and then it was like, it was crazy. It was like 2 weeks later, all of a sudden, I had a project that I went, oh, I could use this for it. It has this library built in perfectly for it, and so I actually used it and learned it as a result of it, but. Interesting. Okay, all right. I don't have time for this, but I might make time.
I know. I'm. You know, it's funny. I don't have time for it either. I can't. I'm so frustrated. I was actually super, super excited about this trip to Singapore because it just was coming at a perfect time in my life where I don't have any plans. I don't have any concerts, no birthdays, nothing. Nothing's going on that I'm having to miss because I'm going to Singapore for 2 weeks or for a week and a half. And this is the first time I've gone on a trip like this where I wasn't skipping Thanksgiving to go abroad. And I was just like, cool, I can go and just relax. I'm going to read half of the Swift textbook and just be jonesing the entire time I'm there. And the one thing I can't do is I got to keep reading enough to stay curious and interested and excited, but I can't read enough to get satiated where I come back and I'm like, I'm bored. I got to keep that balance, because that's actually what I did wrong with Objective-C was I got enough of my curiosities answered just by reading, or I never felt like I needed to practice. And I got so deep in the book that I never got the practice on the basics. So it was
what you got to do too is I've done this, and it's horrible to do it to yourself, but it also works, is open up a notepad or something like that and start typing the code. You won't get to check any of it, but you'll just do it when you get back.
Yeah. That's part of what's really cool about Swift is as you're typing out the code. As in high school or in college, I used to just like copy and paste from the online worksheets and stuff, which is not the same. It's not the same. The first time I went through college, when I was actually learning programming, I typed it out. But like during my undergrad, anytime we had to program, just copy and paste. But what's really cool is as you're typing it out in Xcode, it is like displaying the actual results of what you're doing and stuff, which is really cool because it's running it as script. It's doing live compiling. Your Mac is more powerful than your iPhone, so it's like it's really a unique experience I've found.
And you can make Mac apps, right? I mean, it's not. And is the code got to be different for that, or can you kind of write it once?
I don't know. I am not a Mac developer. I'm an iOS developer.
All right.
Platform of the future. 200 million users. Basis. We're half a. How many is it?
Yeah, it's a lot.
That's a lot. Whatever. Versus the measly 80 million Mac users.
I know. They said that number, and I was like, well, that's not impressive, but okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Good for you guys. So before we move on, one of the last thoughts that I wanted to share was Craig is pretty funny, hilarious guy. You could tell they were up there having fun, you know? And it was, I think The Verge summed it up pretty well where they were talking about Meet the New Apple, where they were just like, you could tell they were relaxed. They were willing to make fun of themselves. You know, even when Tim Cook was like making fun of Microsoft and Android, it was kind of like a wink, wink. Yeah, you know, we're going to do this and, you know, this is how it works. And
yeah,
you know what I mean? It was almost a loving ribbing of them, almost, you know?
Almost, yeah.
And,
well, it was classic Apple in that it was vicious and mean and biased and completely unfair. And for whatever reason, Apple gets away with it because they had, you know...
And the other guys do it too, right? Android's going to come out and be like, we have the most sales. Boom, take that.
Yeah.
What now?
We're the biggest platform in the world, so there. Oh.
Yeah. Look at these charts in our sales, how we dwarf. Yeah. Dwarf. And yeah, so I mean, you know they're going to do it at I/O, and I'm getting excited for this time of year because all this new stuff starts to come out. And yeah, it's pretty fun. But even just, you know, like with all the hair references and pretty hilarious. I love that one. And he's right. It's going to get out on the internet somewhere, and I'm sure if I looked for it, we would find it, and it may make sense to be our cover photo. We'll see. Is the one with Craig's hair on Johnny Ive.
Oh, yeah.
It was in one of the articles that you have.
Oh, was it? Nice. Yeah, I'll find it. I'll find it. Trust me. But... you know, just having fun. And I thought the way that they summed it up was it was no longer a company. Not only are they no longer mourning Steve Jobs' loss, but they've moved beyond it. They're not trying to do what they think is best for him. They're on their own vision and their own thing now. And there's confidence behind that. And it just, you could just tell, you know?
Yeah. No, for sure. And I... Yeah.
Thanks for sharing the photo.
What?
Thanks for sharing the photo.
You're welcome. I knew exactly where it was. So I had to go grab it. So it's clear that they've definitely become more comfortable. And I think part of it is that they realized that Craig Federighi's got the mojo for doing these. And he's got the enthusiasm. He's good at it. And I think I get the feeling that it's just, you know, it's he's their new keynote presenter. And
well, at least for software.
Know.
For hardware, it'll be different. Well, it was funny, too. So Jessie watched a lot of it with me, too, because she's an awesome lady. And it was the was it Epic Games? Was that the guys who came up with the
Koi
pond and stuff? And I had heard him speak earlier because I watched a snippet of the video because I had like a 15-minute break for work, and so I was like, oh, what the heck, I don't care, I'm going to stream it and just watch it. And so I did, and I caught that part of it. And so when I was watching it for reals, and he came up and I just started laughing, I'm like, you're going to love this, Jesse, this guy's entertaining. And he started talking, and he is a geek.
I felt so bad because it's like, I, you know, on one hand, like, this guy is brilliant, and he is responsible for some of the coolest video games out there in the world. I mean, just pushing the state of the art. Like this guy deserves as much respect as any engineer, any technologist out there, and as much, if not more. I mean, this guy is great, and he is the goofiest sounding guy, and I just felt so bad hearing it, because you're just like, I'm so conflicted. Why do you have to be such a nerd?
Oh, it was great. Buddy who was up there doing the demo itself, he wasn't much better. Funny.
You couldn't tell because he was so distracting. I felt bad.
I liked it. I liked it. It was fun. Oh, just goofy. But
yeah.
Cool. Jeez. Any other Apple thoughts? We can, you know, tie a bow around this, wrap it up, say, all right, Apple did their thing. Is it amazing? Have they unseated Android? No, but still cool.
don't tell Mac Daily News that, because they're positive they have.
Well, you know, that's what they do.
Okay, so I got two more Apple thoughts.
Okay.
Number one, Apple released a new ad that's going to be going to be playing during the World Cup, and it's like a health focused ad. And it's
when
is
the World Cup
a lot of,
start up, anyways? Is it
like,
coming up?
We talked about this last week. It's like 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
I don't remember. But the which is one of us should really Google it.
World Cup. I'll do it while you.
Thank you. So basically, it's this new health app. It's all about health, and it features a bunch of different services and devices as things are going. Like in this thing, and it's got this goofy old song about exercise and stuff, and it's getting some what?
Yeah, it is kind of a goofy song.
Yeah, and I like it. I like it in the way that I like Apple ads. That kind of like it's showing people doing real people things and stuff, and it's cool. And it's pumping up their new, like, this number one. What's cool about it is it's a bunch of other people's products that they're showing, it's back to that what you were saying is like they're really pushing the idea of we're building a platform. But it also shows that Apple's going to be all about health in the near future, and they're doing this thing and they're moving forward. Well, one of the big things that everybody really keyed on was they showed quite a few different pieces of hardware from quite a few different companies. They did not show a single wrist-bound pedometer. Which, all right. Enough said.
Man, those are some of those subtleties where it's like, guys, you got way too much time on your hands.
I know, right? Well, it's funny. I mean, at the same time.
But that was like, did you see that one? Thing that Jesse shared over Facebook that was talking about the Google logo and the change.
No.
Oh, it was crazy. She shared it with you, so you should have seen it. So you're lame for not. But they went, Google changed its logo, and people noticed. And it was going on to the internet, and Google finally admitted, they go, yes, we did change the logo. Good for you guys for catching it. They moved the L over a pixel and the G down a pixel because they weren't aligned perfectly.
I was going to say, you know what the best part about that is? You know what my favorite part about that is? There was a graphic artist who sent that out there and had published it and was responsible, and it was like on everything. And then somebody came back and said, it's not right. It's not right. And it drove somebody nuts. Those two pixels, one being like off, one set, drove somebody insane. And they showed everybody, and they went on a warpath trying to get Google onto the page of, we need to fix the Google logo because it's wrong. It was somebody who noticed that and decided that it needed to be fixed, and Google was like, who would notice? But the problem is that they noticed. that's the real – that's where you knew they were going to run into problems, because if they noticed, that means everybody else has noticed. And what probably happened was there was probably somebody who was sitting there who every time they look at the Google logo looks at it and thinks it's wrong, and it drives them nuts. And all of a sudden they looked at it and they went, it's right. Oh my gosh, it's right. They fixed it. And they did, and they couldn't contain themselves. And it's funny. The reason why I like that so much is because every once in a while I do that with stuff where I'll get like, I'll notice things are not perfectly aligned, and it'll drive me nuts that nobody else can see it. I just have to remind myself that by pointing it out will only mean that everybody else who thought it was perfect will realize it's not perfect. So I should just keep my mouth shut.
I've done that kind of stuff where, someone, they'll change the shading or something or a thickness of a line, and I'll go, oh, interesting. Good choice there. And that's where Jesse's like, what in the world are you talking about? Like, well, look, they made it thin. It was like 3 pixels. Now it's like 2 pixels or 1 pixel. She's like, seriously? I'm like, look, that's a big difference, okay? I mean, I know what I just said doesn't sound like it, but it's a big difference. And
yeah.
Pretty funny. And they did a little GIF where you could see it, animated GIF where you could see them go back and forth between the old and the new. Like, oh yeah, they totally did move it. But yeah, but it's something like that, where you catch on the fact that, hey, look, there was a certain type of tech that was conspicuously omitted. We noticed. Oh, we noticed. Yeah.
Of course, well, and it's funny. I mean, and the best part is that Apple knew if they had included anything, that would have been noticed as well. If they had included a Fitbit, a Fitbit One or whatever, or not One, but the one that I had, the Fitbit Flex, that would have been just as noticed.
Because they included the scale from Fitbit, so that was there.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, I'm going to say that's the thing, is that they did Fitbit technology. They just didn't do anything from Fitbit that they're going to compete with yet. So the last thing I wanted to point out is that the Yosemite beta is out, which means people are tearing apart the binaries and looking into it and trying to figure out everything. And there are new resolutions built into the IMAX settings. So when OS X runs on an iMac, it does have a new gamut of resolution, screen resolutions that it can natively run. Just so happens that they are in the ballpark of a 4K, quote-unquote, Retina display iMac, which, if you remember from the beginning of the year, that was one of our kind of far-out-there predictions. Nobody was saying it, but it just seems obvious that they're doing it with everything else, so why wouldn't they, you know, why wouldn't they eventually do that with the iMac, that was coming this year? So I am very excited that it turned, you know, that the Furlough Bros are the first to predict it, and everything is going as planned. Our Retina display 4K iMacs are on the way, and I will not be buying one, but I just like being right.
There's a 4K television for sale on Amazon that actually goes on sale every once in a while, or for, you know, has a discount on it, whatever you want to say that. And man, sometimes I'll look at it, because Lifehacker will feature it and like, dude, 4K TV, it's actually reasonable. It's like $800, you know, when it's on sale. I know, exactly. And I'm like, geez, if I were going, I don't know the rest of the stats on it, it may not make sense, but I was like, man, if I were to get a television, because every once in a while I start to crumble and think about it, I'm like, I would probably go for a 4K TV just to semi-try to future-proof myself.
Yeah, future-proof yourself for 3 years. What I love is that the prices are already they went from absurd to not impossible in a year. It's nuts. I mean, it literally is going to be 5 years before you won't be able to buy 1080p TVs anymore. They'll all be 4K, which is exciting.
Yeah,
your measly 1K TVs. But yeah, very cool, very cool, very, very, very cool. Good stuff. So
one more to finish things up, so that it's not totally Apple. There was a scientific breakthrough by Dutch scientists this last week.
Yeah, I like breakthroughs.
They do. They unlocked the secret to the sci-fi phenomenon of teleportation. They successfully caused one atom to vanish and reappear nearly 10 feet away.
All right, you piqued my interest.
That's right. They demonstrated a demonstration, I guess, in which information was encoded into subatomic particles, and then it was teleported between two points with 100% accuracy the very first time. And so they were saying, if you believe we are nothing more than a collection of atoms, we being human beings, strung together in a particular way, then in principle, it should be possible to teleport ourselves from one place to another. I like this part. In practice, it's extremely unlikely, but to say it can never work is very dangerous. I would not rule it out because there's no fundamental law of physics preventing it. And so they're actually going to apply this towards quantum computers that, you know, are fast. And so what they will do is they'll create a quantum version of the internet, essentially extending a global network where they can send quantum information. And so the idea is that you can take those qubits and send the information wherever really, 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 really fast. And they're like, and the cool part about it is that it's totally secure because it literally is like rearranging it again. You know, it's not traveling. That sounds weird to say. You know, it's just appearing and then reassembling. And so they're like, yeah. Super fast. We're gonna have a quantum internet here. Pretty cool.
That is very cool, and then that is exciting because it's. Have you ever read Mikko He's this like super famous physicist. I can't pronounce his name. I feel terrible about it. But he wrote a book called The Physics of the Impossible, and he talks about the three types of impossibilities. He classifies things that are impossible into three types.
There's class one impossibilities, technologies that are, quote, impossible today, but that do not violate the known laws of physics. And he talks about what kind of technologies those are and if they'll be around in like a, you know, and those are things that are like going to be around in a century or two. So it's like impossible technologies would be, in this form would be quantum computers. Yeah, they're impossible today, but they don't violate any
known laws. Don't break any rules. Yeah.
And they'll probably be coming around if we can get enough capital. There's class two impossibilities. Class two impossibilities are technologies that sit at the very edge of our understanding of the physical world, possibly taking thousands or millions of years to become available. So actual mass teleportation, macro teleportation of entire objects, much less living creatures, definitely falls into the class two impossibility range. Very, very, very difficult. And then the final class of impossibilities are class three impossibilities. And these are technologies that violate the known laws of physics. And he writes that basically like pre-motion machines and precognition, things that definitely violate and aren't possible because they're not possible. So you'd have to have a change. And it's funny, even those, if you read the book, he puts in the caveat of, now it's possible that we're wrong about physics. In which case, so he actually, what's great about the physics of the impossible is that he actually like basically states there's nothing that's impossible. There's just, it's impossible as far as we know. This right. is what would have to change in order to make it possible. And obviously there are very few things in class one impossibilities, class two impossibilities. It's a bigger hurdle. Class three impossibilities, you'd have to change the universe as we understand it. So that's cool. I like those kind of articles because they do the hits, you know, it's the they want to get hits, so they talk about human transportation and then they scale it back to, oh yeah, and this is the reason why they're doing it. It's kind of like the graphene stuff where they're like,
I'm okay with that.
Graphene can generate, you know, all the power we'll ever need from salt water. And then like if we use the ocean and massive sheets of graphene and it doesn't make any sense. But it could be used for distillation, which is cool. And you're like, why didn't you just say that? That is cool. That's cool and whatever. But
oh, I understand. But it doesn't get the clicks.
Exactly. Got to get the clicks. We got to come up with better titles, James. Got to get the clicks.
Seriously. Furlough Bros completely deconstruct Apple's strategy.
Yeah. Explain the future of Apple with...
Yeah. Apple's next release explained. Well... part of it. There'll be new hardware. That's all we can explain.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty funny. Hey, cool, man. Good show. I appreciate it. Travel safe. Let's see, by the time people listen to this, you will already be in Singapore, I believe.
I will already be in Singapore. I will be tomorrow. It'll be tomorrow for me, I think.
It will be tomorrow. Well, yeah. Because you're like way ahead. On the
Have to start out what the heck we're going to do with our lives when it comes to the next one.
Yeah, we'll figure that out offline, and we'll go from there. Partly will depend on you, but not partly.
I'd say
mostly depend on you. But yeah, cool, man. Like I said, safe travels, have fun, and we will see you on the flip side. So everybody else, thank you for joining us. I am James Furlough. My traveling brother is Matthew Furlough, and we will talk next time.